This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome, everybody. Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM Channel 158. Why is that funny?
You just didn't sound very, you didn't really sound like you believed it.
I feel like I
what a day, what a day.
I feel like I can't win with you.
What a day today. Huh, guys? We've got so much going on. We're fired up to be here on Money Moves. Jonathan Von Tobel, Stormy Bonatoni. We've got a lot. We've got the World Cup that is in action right now. Norway currently leading 1-0 at the break. We'll get to what happened last night. We have our rundown. We're going to look at the shows. There's so much happening. And the best part is, it's not the major sports. Yeah, baseball's going on. But we've got the WNBA Commissioner's Cup Final. We've got so much to celebrate here in the world of sports. Aren't you fired up about it?
Anyone else think he sounded super disingenuous? Like, you're just a faker now.
No
way. Who wants that? Who wants that energy? Also, by the way, that did kind of remind me a little bit of on Friday when Mike Palm was on the program, and I did come into a segment super excited. You're like, oh, a little loud, Stormy. Pipe down.
I mean, you were yelling. There's a difference between projecting, yelling, and
As you talk about all the sports that we do have going on, though, Serena Williams about to make her singles debut back out there at the All England Club. Should be fun.
Wimbledon. Yep. Looking forward to it. Can't wait to see what she's got in store. That should be starting any minute now, actually. So hopefully we can get that up and we can keep an eye on it. That's what I mean. I mean, this is a cool time of the year. And, you know, Mitch and I talked about this on the podcast last night, Pod of the Futures. That should be up sometime today, which is just, we are very lucky that the World Cup has been on and you get Wimbledon too. There's so much that has carried us through what many would consider the dead time in sports. And we had even touched on the fact that today is the day. We should be getting a ton of news in the NBA today. We already got some. So, man, everything's just moving and grooving.
I was going to say, some of which we already have. So we will hit on that in a moment with the rundown. But worth noting, ahead of this Serena Williams match, she's taking on Australia's Maya Joint. Serena, plus 102 dog for the match. Joint sitting around minus 129. The total games set at 21.5. Total sets, 2.5 as well. Some prices for you, plus 135 on the over 2.5, minus 185 to the under.
And if you want some updates on where we're at halftime here between Norway and the Ivory Coast, they are just do qualify, just to move on, a minus 450 favorite on the three-way in regulation. Ivory Coast 7-1, the draw is plus 310, Norway minus 220. Remember, we had some drama with that yesterday while we were on the air with Brazil, who right before that game ended, they were 3-1 to win the game in regulation and got a late extra time goal. This has been nuts, dude. This tournament has been fantastic, and we have more details on that, but tremendous play so far out there on the various pitches in the Americas.
Antonio Nusa with your lone goal here for Norway in the 39th minute, but you said it. Let's set the table with everything else we've got on deck. Busy show upon us for Money Moves. Here's the rundown.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the rundown.
In addition to all the stuff we just talked about, we've also got a loaded 15-game card in Major League Baseball. VSiN's own Adam Burke, managing editor, going to join us to break it all down. Also, you know, MLB betting analyst as well, sneaks in that title every once in a while with all of the other things he's got going on. But plenty of bets to consider and big picture topics to get into with the NFL as well, with some other news that has come down.
Why can't this team that is double digits to make the playoffs do it, Stormy? Adam's going to tell us why.
We mentioned already day two of the knockout round was bonkers yesterday, or as many German fans might be saying today. Ich glaube, mein Schwein fight. Translation, please, JVT.
Actually, I don't remember. What is it? My pig is whistling?
Yes, it says. It translates directly to, I think my pig is whistling, but it really just means extreme shock.
Yeah.
I can't believe what happened, especially for Germany yesterday.
Yeah, that was pretty wild. I was live doing local radio, and I could not stop interrupting, as I usually do here, with everything going on, including those penalty kicks, which were absolutely incredible. The back and forth, the missed opportunities for both teams. Eventually, Paraguay comes out on top, but a ridiculous result. And some would say, look, transitive property is not really a real thing, but I'll tell you one thing. Team USA kicked the crap out of Paraguay.
Yes.
And that is maybe opening the door for the Americans, at least in terms of the quality of play that we have seen from them, because the Germans were not playing particularly well in that matchup. And it ends a pretty disappointing World Cup, especially when you talk about group play and the way that they had played as well.
Well, especially considering, too, Germany thought they had it won on that header late in the 102nd minute. VAR disallows the goal after goal for goalie interference. And then you get to the PKs, and there was some chaos there as well, just in terms of guys maybe not even wanting to step up to the plate to do so.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to add to that as we get forward and look at that game. But, yes, that was it. And by the way, I've changed my tune. I'm going to go with a lot of the Euros and the Brits on this. I'm going to go VAR.
Okay, I like that. I'm with it. Germany was a $7 favorite to advance. Obviously, they don't get it done here. Poor Jonathan Tah. Meanwhile, Netherlands, their World Cup dreams end in heartbreak once again as well. This time to Morocco that equalized with a late goal in the 91st minute.
Good.
They went on to win 3-2 in PKs as well. We're going to get things started in the National Basketball Association. Will King James Crown be Golden State? We'll touch on that side of it in a moment, but the NBA's all-time leading scorer, LeBron James.
I wouldn't have any idea.
I was trying to be. We got the news this morning. He will officially return for a record 24th NBA season, but that he has informed the Los Angeles Lakers it will not be with them. So one step forward in what has kind of been the presumed reports over the last couple days.
Told you so, right? I mean, we had discussed this. This seemed like it was going to be the case. The Lakers had not reached out to LeBron in any way, shape, or form, according to multiple reports. Then the report comes down that Draymond Green declines the player option, and all of a sudden the Lakers are like, hey, let's whoa, I didn't think you were serious about this, buddy. Let's talk. And then, of course, LeBron decides that it's time to move on. So we will see where he ultimately lands. It sounds like it's two spots, that it is either Cleveland or Golden State, but I would make Golden State the favorite. Again, going back to the connections and the tea leaves that we talked about yesterday, Draymond Green being a clutch client and working now, having Rich Paul's representation, he is not going to be advised to decline that player option unless the pieces are in place for them to take advantage of what is going to happen. So LeBron, as you see here, joins the list of these notable free agents, but I would assume that two of those three on that list will ultimately have a Golden State Warriors logo next to their names when all is said and done, because I think that that is the plan. Now, the new wrinkle that has emerged is that the Wizards are not going to want to move on from Anthony Davis, and that Jimmy Butler will be sticking around for Golden State. Things can change, but it does seem at the very least that LeBron, Curry, and Draymond are well on their way to teaming up with one another, unless Cleveland can swoop in with something sweet.
The Warriors did also re-sign Kristaps Porzingis yesterday, 2-year, $40 million deal there. But worth noting that the money layer of this shouldn't really play a factor for Golden State based on everything that we've heard about LeBron and this being a, quote, happiness-led decision, according to ESPN's Shams Charania, that wherever he lands, it's not going to be a financially driven decision. Somebody who's made the max contract for the entirety of his career, pretty much at 41, 42 years old, going to be taking, like, what, a $15 million, $20 million contract, you would assume?
As you do, you know, that happens to me all the time. I have to turn it down.
Oh, so poor.
So the question now all becomes, I mean, we hit on this briefly yesterday, but if you look at it from the conference standpoint, right now the Thunder are plus 150. The Spurs are plus 160 to win the Western Conference. The Timberwolves plus the 1,300. Same thing with the Nuggets. The Warriors are at 16. The Lakers are at 18. I would argue the Lakers probably need to slip a little bit further, and ultimately they might, just considering what's going to happen with LeBron. Where does LeBron end up? And let's say it's with the Golden State Warriors. What does that do with the rest of the odds? Because there's two things that matter here. And I brought this up on Pod of the Futures with Mitch Moss in the latest episode, which was, I want to bet the Timberwolves to win the Western Conference. I think that that move is a good one with LaMelo. Remember, they re-signed Ayo Dosunmu. I like the new look of what this team is going to be. I like the shift more toward a backcourt-oriented, twingy athletic group that's going to move a little bit quicker than the big, plotting physical group they had prior. That matters because, can I bet 13-1 or better now, or do I wait? And if they get LeBron, will the Warriors move up? Will the Timberwolves move down? And thus, some of the moving pieces that are out there, you'll get a better number ultimately on Minnesota than what the market is currently post at. And, Stormy, we should note that floating around all of this is the Nuggets sniffing around Jaylen Brown.
Okay.
And ultimately wanting to go and get him. So there's still a lot of pieces that have yet to move here, but this is one of the first dominoes, and we're still waiting for it to ultimately fall down to the ground. It's on its way. We just have to find out where LeBron will be.
Well, and you should note that those odds have already started to move for Golden State, even though LeBron hasn't even gone there. You mentioned the 16-1 for them in the Western Conference. That was 18-1 when we had this discussion yesterday. They were 35-1 to win the NBA Finals. They're 25-1 now. So we've already seen an adjustment, even though there hasn't actually been the move yet. But this is what they try to do, right? Try to get ahead of things as much as you can. Because you mentioned Jaylen Brown, I've been seeing more and more reports, whether it's from Brian Windhorst or some of these other guys, saying that, I mean, Boston's really doing whatever they can now, essentially, to move him. And I don't know if that's a relationship element of this, since they were trying to go all in for Giannis and didn't get it and trying to see what that would be. But a lot of the latest reports have been about draft picks and trying to see how many firsts they can get for him, which doesn't seem to be, I mean, that seems like a mixed message from going to get Giannis and trying to go all in on winning now to then trading in a big asset like Jaylen Brown for draft picks, which would be much more forward and future looking.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm a little confused only because, okay, yeah, that was a little bit better. One prediction market I looked up had Jaylen Brown's next team at 90. 92% Memphis. And I was like, that's not right. 32% stays with Boston or retires. Portland at 18%. Denver at 14%. They've been rising. Clippers are also sniffing around there, too. And then you get into the deeper single digits, Atlanta, Cleveland, Detroit. So it does say that right now the betting market, or excuse me, the prediction markets would say that the likely outcome is that he stays with Boston. But again, we're only at a 32% clip there. So I would say that he is going to be on the move. The question is just where. And I think Denver is one of those little dark horses you might want to watch out for. Because think about where Denver's at right now. They go and they win the NBA Finals all those years ago. And Stormy, for the most part, they've kind of run it back each year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the core of Aaron Gordon and Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. They've added little pieces. They've given Christian Brown a bigger role. They've allowed Peyton Watson to really grow. They tried to get Cam Johnson to replace Michael Porter Jr. And they've added at the edges, but they really have not changed that core. Well, the core seems to maybe have run its course. So I think it would make some sense. And with the news that Jokic is kind of putting off signing his extension, it would mean that maybe he's putting a little pressure on the team to do something outside of just adding on the periphery, and maybe Jaylen Brown might be just that.
Okay, still a lot of runway left, and because you did bring up Memphis, and this is something we can discuss on the other side of the break, but the Grizzlies finally get Ja Morant off the books here. They've been trying to get rid of him. He's been wanting to leave for what feels like forever at this point. He ends up going to the Portland Trailblazers for Jerami Grant, and this is something why you laugh.
Well, just think about that. If I told you 2 years ago that Ja Morant was going to get moved for Jerami Grant's massive
Chris
contract
Murray.
And the lesser Murray twin, yes, like that's... How far we have fallen, but I apologize.
No, continue. Absolutely. I was just going to say we can pick up on this, but also a conversation we can dive a little bit deeper into with Travis Demers a little bit later on, the radio play-by-play voice for the Trailblazers. Get his thoughts on how all of that has transpired. Stick around, though. We're just getting started here on Money Moves. So much more to come. Still 1-0 with Norway as the second half is underway in Game 1 of the World Cup today. Stick around. More next.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. VSiN Pro gives you access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
While the news of the day is certainly LeBron James not returning to the Los Angeles Lakers, we got a lot of NBA news in the last 24 hours, including, as we mentioned at the end of last segment, the Memphis Grizzlies, who were unable to find a trade partner for Ja Morant a year ago. This has been an unhappy situation for a while. Able to find somebody to go in on this with. Portland ends up being the landing spot in a trade for Jerami Grant and Chris Murray. And I wanted to ask you about this, because like you said, yes, Ja Morant, like this has been a fall from grace, obviously. And to think that this is the trade compensation for a guy like him seems a little bit crazy. But it is what it is the last couple of years. Could this be a good buy low, though, for Portland and maybe a change of scenery, get him back to the guy that he used to be?
I mean, I think in theory, sure. And anything can be a good buy low if he wants to take things seriously about the off-court stuff. My worry, I think, with Ja Morant is more about and what we don't talk enough about, and he's kind of been out of the limelight for a little bit, has been a change in his game. So when you look at Ja and the way that he has played since he got into the year, since he got into the league, his rookie season, if I could speak properly here, look at the way he has taken his shots from the field, Stormy. We'll start from his first year on. So his rookie season, he takes in 49% of his shots within 4 feet of the basket. That's in the 94th percentile. We know what he is and what he was, right? Explosive, pressure on the rim, fun finishes, dunks, things like that. As his seasons have progressed, he has really strayed away from taking those shots at the rim. His rookie year, 49%. Last year in 20 games, he took just 30% of his shots within 4 feet of the basket. And you're going to say, well, it's only 20 games, small sample size. Okay. The year prior, when he played in 50, he took just 33% of his shots within 4 feet of the basket. So he is not the same player in the sense of being explosive, putting pressure on the rim, being what he was. And so we could talk a lot about the off-court stuff. Mm-hmm. You can talk a lot about him not being available and the guns and the celebrations and everything like that. To me, the bigger worry is twofold. It's that. Is he straying away from what once made him great? Because he doesn't really have a jump shot. So that's got to be something you got to work on if you're him, if you're really not going to put pressure on the rim like you used to. And the other aspect of it is, look at this now constipation of guards that you have. You've got Damian Lillard. You've got Ja Morant. You've got Scoot Henderson. You've got Drew Holiday. You've got Shaedon Sharpe. And we can even just throw Shaedon Sharpe out just because he's not one in the ilk of the four that we're talking about, which are true point guards used to having the ball in their hands. So what in the world are you going to do with true four ones on this roster? And that adds to the worry because according to some reports, they're out for whatever reason on Jaylen Brown. So I just wonder what the hell they're doing. Look, it's a cheap buy low. You're buying for 25 cents on the dollar. So I guess I get it to an extent, but from a roster construction standpoint and from the evolution of his game, I just don't really buy that this is going to be a positive addition.
His scoring has dropped four straight seasons, the three-point percentage under 30%. And you mentioned it too, like several injuries, several things that have kept him off the court outside of the injuries as well. Only played 79 games over the last three seasons. So I know Portland is certainly hoping that he can get back to what he once was. For them, Memphis probably just happy to be rid of him at this point, unfortunately. Like, a very talented guy, but clearly problematic for a number of reasons.
Yeah, and look, Memphis is just changing. They're rebuilding. They have now a young core that they're trying to build around it. That would include, of course, starting with Cam Boozer, who they drafted. But remember, they have Cedric Coward, who was there last year, who's playing off ball, who is a really good find for them as well. So there's a lot there for Memphis to really thrive on Zach Edey. So the future looks pretty bright, and Memphis has done a good job in retooling this pretty quickly. So we'll see what Portland does. It's not that I don't buy it. I just don't. It doesn't make any sense the way their roster looks right now. And by the way, we even have thrown in the fact that all these ball dominant guards, Denny Avdija just won Most Improved Player of the Year, and he is a guy that you need to have the ball in his hands as well. And I'm always proponent of, hey, they always make it work, all these stars. But now you've got a lot of guys who are kind of playing the same position, and that's going to be something that I think just doesn't really work.
We will continue, I'm sure, to see more and more players on the move as we go here. But we got
today's the day, too. I should not to break it off, but we are waiting for Kawhi. And by all accounts, today is the day Kawhi will be moved. But we'll see if that's actually true.
Have you settled on where that's going to be in your head? Do you think it's Toronto?
Oh, it's Toronto. The report this morning was that they've agreed on a player package, that they're just waiting for draft compensation to get worked out. So it sounds like it's going to be Toronto. It sounds like it's going to be. And just to build on that really quick, because I know you want to move on. But Zach Cohen and I were talking about this. We'll have a pod tomorrow, Hardwood Handicappers. That'll be out. It'll be like a free agency thing. We're hoping that everything will be settled by then. I will say this right now. I agree with Zach. I think Toronto with Kawhi is arguably the second best team at worst in the Eastern Conference, and they can win the Eastern Conference.
Okay.
So I think that team is going to be very, very good. And you talk about getting ahead of the market on certain things. Right now in the Eastern Conference, again, courtesy of DraftKings, Raptors are about 14-1 or so. That's moved. I think they were about 20-1 yesterday, but I don't think they're going to move that much when they get Kawhi. But I do think power rating wise, personally, they're going to be up there as maybe the second best team. Because the other thing, I know I'm kind of ranting here, but the other thing we have to figure out too is, why is Boston still considered the favorite?
Yeah.
If Jaylen Brown's going to be gone, and by all accounts, they're looking for draft compensation for him, this is going to be a solo Jason Tatum team. And it seems like they're just up there because of the logo on the jersey, as opposed to what this team realistically is going to look like. And I think that means there's some opportunities in the Eastern Conference.
And that there's been movement in favor of them, too, because the Knicks were the favorite, and Boston has leapfrogged them in the market, interestingly enough. But there was also, as we wait more information on that and others, there was also a big indictment that came down yesterday. We've been wondering for the last year or so what was going to come of this Malik Beasley saga as it pertains to the gambling investigation. And yesterday, he and Ed Davis, as well as another NBA agent, are among six defendants that were indicted on charges for an alleged sports gambling scheme stemming from a handful of games back in the 2023-24 season. Now, Beasley's attorney has said that they've coordinated with the U.S. Attorney's Office for him to voluntarily surrender himself and that, quote, to remind people, an indictment is not proof of guilt or evidence. It's merely a charge of probable cause. The investigation was a year and a half long, and we maintain Malik's innocence of all charges. That said, when you look at some of the text messages that we've seen from the indictment, I know ESPN's David Purdom was on with Mitch and Pauly yesterday. We'll play a clip from that in a moment. But talking about some of the text messages, he's posted some of those direct pages from the indictment that seems obviously you're correct and that nobody is guilty yet, but it seems like all things are pointing to that direction.
Yeah, a lot of strong circumstantial evidence pointing in the direction of Beasley being involved in some way or form. And some of it reportedly maybe having to do with a debt that he had to settle. So we will see if that ultimately comes out in the wash. But his attorney said this is what they were working on, that they were going to voluntarily surrender. So it doesn't mean an admission of guilt that he went out there and surrendered, part of the process. So we'll see how this plays out. And really, that's all you can do at this point right now. It's out of reading some of the text messages and doing what you're supposed to do, I guess, on social media, which is just wildly speculate and play old clips of Malik Beasley in games from years past.
Well, one of them was directly like tied to some of those text messages. I'll pull it up right now. You see one of the co-conspirators saying, oh my gosh, he got one rebound with 1.1 second left. Fam, no way. He pushed Connaughton out of the way, LMAO, because he needed to get over 3.5 rebounds for that game. And that clip has been going viral of him literally pushing Connaughton out of the way.
I mean, it is interesting. I think the interesting wrinkle to this is that to that point, he needed to get over 3.5 rebounds. And this was not Jontay Porter who was fixing results and going out there and tanking while his results are getting bet under.
Well, this is one specific
instance. That's what I'm saying.
We don't know all of them. But he reportedly stopped doing what he was doing when the Jontay Porter stuff came down. You mentioned him being in debt. That was something that David Purdom said on Follow the Money yesterday, discussing how Beasley's role in the scheme involved paying off debts to Ed Davis.
He was in debt to Davis, according to the indictment, and it doesn't really explain why he was in debt. But this whole scheme, he didn't necessarily get straight money from it. He had to pay off his debts that he owed Davis for. So he would say, okay, there were four games that the Fed said were targeted, at least four games. He would say, hey, I'm not going to get my – I'm going to stay under my rebound total tonight. He would tell Davis. He would tell about three or four other bettors, and they would allegedly spread a bunch of money around and place these big bets. Now, again, these bets, you know, $1,000 here, $1,000 here. I think one of the most they had a total was $25,000 in prop bets on one game. $25,000 is a lot to me. It's not a lot to a guy that's making $15 million a year. Mm-hmm.
And in one of those additional text message exchanges that goes off of that, Davis says, only way you can beat Vegas is sports betting. Everything else, they've got the edge. To which Beasley responds, well, yeah, trying to find like 2K. I'll do my best to play full on in the first. And then talks about switching from texting to Snapchat because you can't save those. Yeah. You know, like a lot of things are, again, leading toward.
Yeah, no, I'm not. Beasley is definitely whatever reason, and even if they were betting some overs, like that doesn't matter. You cannot be doing this. I mean, we were talking about this earlier with the Sorsby stuff. Like, again, seems pretty cut and dry to me. You should not be able to just bet on the team that you're playing on. Same thing here. Whatever Beasley was doing, if that is indeed proven to be found correct, like he should have the book thrown at him because this is illegal.
At least three defendants in that other gambling case from the Eastern District of New York are considered co-conspirators in this case involving Malik Beasley as well, including Damon Jones, former NBA player and assistant who has already pled guilty to an inside information case with Terry Rozier that we learned about recently earlier this year. Also, just in terms of those debts, I thought this was interesting. According to the indictment, Beasley lost millions gambling during his 9-year career, has struggled financially in recent years as well. A judge ordered him pay $1 million to his former agency last March after he failed to pay back $650K in a marketing advance. He was also evicted from his high rise in Detroit last summer when his landlord sued him for more than $21K in unpaid rent. Like, and this is, if you remember when all this news came out, was when he was about to sign a 3-year $42 million deal with the Pistons. Mm-hmm. To have to be nickel and dime and getting sued for all of this stuff because you made poor gambling decisions and have to, crazy, crazy situation, crazy life, all of this. And I'm excited and interested to learn more as we read more from this indictment.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, moments ago, we just saw 23-time Grand Slam winner Serena Williams head out to the court at the All England Club, set to play her first singles match since 2022. She is a slight dog in the match, plus 102. Australia's Maya Joint, minus 129 favorite. We'll keep tabs on this as we go. Also, Norway remains up 1-0 against the Ivory Coast, where things sit right now as the World Cup action rolls on in the 70th minute. Excited, though, to welcome you back here to Money Moves. Story Bon and Tony, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Adam Burke, kind enough to hang out with us in studio for the next half hour. VSiN managing editor. What's up, dude? How have you been enjoying all the World Cup action?
You know the answer.
Yeah, I'm confused at the question, given that I haven't watched any of it.
Also, considering right before we came on, I invited him to go watch the Mexico game tonight, and he quite literally said, I'm watching that.
I thought it would be fun. I thought it would be
fun. It's not my thing. I have a better question.
I was genuinely curious to see if you were going to fake it or if you were going to
No.
Like where you were going
to
go.
No. I fake it a lot. Not when it comes to soccer. I can't do that.
Football, please.
By the way, now that ESPN is getting darts, is there a chance that you will be able to cover darts?
You know, that's interesting. I have retired from Obscure Sports Quarterly. However, if I ever got the call up for the hot dog eating contest, that would be something that I would be willing to jump back in. But for anyone who doesn't know, I have covered so many weird things in my career, including the American Cornhole League and Slam Ball and Spike Ball. And so, yeah, darts I'm going to hold off. I actually did turn down an axe throwing competition once as well. So the more you know.
You can't turn down darts. It's way too much fun.
If it was actually in one of those like crazy chaos houses overseas and I could get flown
like
out
World
to the darts
championship,
yes, I would be so game for that.
Okay.
That's different. That's next level.
I imagine there are people that are sitting there going, this moron doesn't like soccer, but he's sitting here talking up darts. What's wrong with this guy?
Well, something you do love is baseball. And I know you've been needing. Yeah, that's fair. Nick Bogdanovich here has always talked about betting baseball as like whiskey in a revolver. It's not a good time half of the time, and you never know what you're going to get at times. However, you're still making bets every day. So did you have one in particular you liked today? I know we've got a few we can get into, but anything you really felt confident in?
Yeah, there's a few, and the love-hate thing kind of spawns from one of my plays today, which is to take the Rangers against the Guardians. Really short price, I think, on Texas here with Jacob deGrom on the bump. Tanner Bibee going for Cleveland. I mean, Bibee's been okay, but, you know, he's a guy that the control, the command profile is not always there. I mean, there was one start earlier this year against Washington. He gave up 5 home runs in that start. It's going to be very hot in Cleveland all week long. Ball's going to carry well at Progressive Field, much better than it usually does. That's probably a bad thing for Bibee. Probably doesn't matter for Jacob deGrom because nobody for the Guardians hits for power right now with Jose Ramirez out, Chase DeLauder just coming back from injury. So I just thought this price was way too short. Guardians bullpen is back to being a dumpster fire. Just a really, really bad baseball team facing a guy who's still getting it done at a very high level in Jacob deGrom. And also, he struck out over 30% of left-handed batters so far this season. We know the Guardians love their platoons. They're not going to deviate from that. So should be a pretty easy matchup for DeGrom tonight. I like the Rangers.
Big picture building off of this play for you. You and I are both, I believe we're still both Rangers truthers. I'm still holding strong on this ticket to win the division and to win the American League. They have won 5 straight. They still have a minus run differential, but currently control first place in the division. So what's been behind this win streak outside of just the sweep of the Blue Jays? Are we buying what we're seeing from the Rangers? I think they've won also, what, like 8 out of the last 10 or something in that range?
Yeah, they've been playing really well here of late. I mean, they're such a good team from a starting pitching standpoint, right? I mean, you know, Mackenzie Gore is a guy who has a ton of talent. We'll see if he eventually puts it all together and gets more consistent. But, you know, DeGrom is fantastic. Nate Eovaldi's a guy who's very experienced. The offense, I think, has some problems, has some holes. But I do think this is a team that will be very active at the trade deadline. And Seattle's been very underwhelming, right? I know that they have a positive run differential, one of the few teams in the American League that does. But you know, they're not separating themselves, and they've had the chance to. So Texas still hanging around. I'm on their season win total over. I also played them to win this division prior to the start of the season. So I'm hoping it comes through. But, yeah, they've been playing a lot better here of late. And, you know, it certainly helps now when you're, you know, facing a team like Cleveland.
Quickly, for those of you who might be watching on YouTube TV or the VSiN Watch app, you saw a big celebration in the background of the sports book. The Ivory Coast ties it up against Norway. It's 1-1 now in the 74th minute. So cash it if you had both teams to score in this one as well. I know you were you excited? Like,
I mean, look, Cote d'Ivoire is how you put it, I guess, is the proper way to pronounce it. But dude, they've played really well in this tournament. They pushed Germany, probably deserved a better result in group play. I love when guys kick things, and that's exactly what happened with Norway here in this replay. But they're a really good club, and it just goes back to what we've talked about with Norway, and one of the issues in playing Holland to win the Golden Boot was I think they're a little bit more of a flawed team, especially on defense potentially, and Ivory Coast has played with them every step of the way in this match, and now we're all knotted up in the 75th minute. So, and it just goes back, dude, I know you haven't watched these games, but they have been fantastic. This whole product has been great. And this is just another one that we're watching right now. So
obviously still plenty of time in regulation, but plus 240 was the price on the draw here. If Ivory Coast can come out of this thing in regulation, plus 255 to advance, plus 140 for Ivory Coast. Okay, let's get back to the baseball here. The Yankees, another team that you're looking at today. It's Cam Schlittler day. He's minus 115 odds on favorite now for the Cy Young in the American League, and a good pitching matchup in all for the Tigers, who took game one of the series against the Yankees. Got Tarek Skubal going on the other side today.
Yeah, really, really good game. Really good pitching matchup here, as you said. But I think that this is one of those cases where Skubal's name value gives us a really good price on the Yankees. Sure. Cam Schlittler has been fantastic this season. He's struck out, 29 batters in his last three starts. Really, really good. The Tigers don't have a good offense. They don't have a particularly potent group against right-handed pitching. And Skubal is an incredible pitcher, obviously, but 10 runs on 16 hits and 16 and a third since he came back. He's given up six home runs in that span. Like, he's not quite there yet. And maybe he will get there. Also, a guy who's dealing with the fact that he's probably going to get traded within the next, 4 to 6 weeks or so. That could take a toll on a player, too, especially because this is really the only organization that he's ever known. Just that uncertainty of not knowing where you're going to end up as you head into free agency, too, where you're going to get a monster contract. So there's a lot of things going on right now for Tarek Skubal, where I think he's just not sharp. Gave up three home runs to the Yankees in his last start at Comerica Park. Now he's playing in that little league field that they call Yankee Stadium. So smaller dimensions everywhere. I think it's a problem for him. Again, warm tonight. Ball's going to carry at Yankee Stadium. I like the Yankees here in this one. I think Schlittler's going to be really good. And I think Skubal's just, he's not there yet. And so I think the Yankees are a pretty good price tonight.
To the point of the way these pitchers are getting priced, especially guys that are on some hot streaks. Look at last night, Gage Jump. So yeah. He comes up to the AAA. He had been off to an amazing start. Dodgers were only minus 115, minus 120 last night. Jump all over him, pun intended. Bomb him for two runs, get him out there, and then, of course, get a win. So let's talk about the Athletics today. Because back in action, of course, against Los Angeles, Wroblewski in spring. So what are we looking at here?
Yeah, and that was one yesterday, too, where I think the presence of Eric Lauer really helped us get a good number on the Dodgers. Because this is a guy, his expected ERA is over 5. A guy that was in line for a lot of negative regression. And it did hit, too. He did not pitch particularly well in that game yesterday. But, still got a really good price on him. So, and the Dodgers specifically. And that's something I wanted to point out real quick here, too, before we get into this game, although it is relevant to this game. The slugging percentage of Major League Baseball here in the month of June, highest it's been since 2019. And, of course, that was the juiced ball season where just everything was flying out of the ballpark. So offense is up a little bit. Ball seems to be carrying a little bit better. There are some people that have kind of been covering that angle a little bit here over the last few weeks. I think maybe that's something that does come into play here today in Sacramento. Another warm weather game. Wroblewski's a guy, a lot of negative regression signs in his profile. Pitches to a lot of contact, very low strikeout rate. You can't carry a high left on base percentage unless you're going to get strikeouts, right? When you pitch to contact in high leverage, balls are eventually going to find holes. Only has a .235 batting average on balls in play against. So a lot of things that are pointing against Wroblewski tonight, I think. Springs hasn't been great. I totally understand that. That's a little bit of the gamble here and why this price is so big on the A's tonight. But I just think Wroblewski against this lineup in this setting, in this type of ballpark, I think this is one of those where you do kind of see a little bit of a rough patch for him kind of come to fruition. Again, a guy with a 462 Sierra, Skill Interactive ERA, which is one of the best run estimators that we have, kind of suggesting his future performance is going to be, mid fours, close to 5 ERA. I could see something like that type of performance tonight. Plus, so I like the A's, and I also like A's first 5 team total over 2.5, minus 115.
Beautiful. I was going to say for that money line price, plus 141 on the A's where we sit right now. And while Adam does have an article up right now breaking down these plays, he does it each and every day up at VSiN.com. It's worth noting Adam is also our fearless leader in the content space, making sure that we have coverage of everything that's going on right now, whether it be the World Cup. Zach Cohen's doing a great job with all of the Wimbledon coverage. Alex Blowers and the articles he's writing. Josh Applebaum, if you look at Marcus, was all this. But with the 4th of July coming up next week, or this weekend rather, we've got a special deal going on right now where you get 2 full years of VSiN Pro access for $299. That's access through July of 2028. We're talking 70% off what our usual monthly price is. So if you want to come join us on the full time basis, VSiN.com/subscribe is how you can do it. The offer does end on July 7th. This is a 4th of July special. We do not do this often. So if you want access to everything we do at the website each and every day, that's the best way to do it.
And I will say this, while I'm not watching the World Cup, I started writing my ACC team previews for our college football betting guide. Sent out assignments for that yesterday. That comes out August 3rd, so that's something you'll get with that 2 years for $2.99 price.
We're not giving away 250-year subscription in celebration of our 250th birthday in America.
The meteor will come first.
Submit it to the marketing people. What are we doing?
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
30 million in guaranteed prizes could be coming your way. Cash in this football season in Las Vegas with three Circus Sports contests. Entry starting at $1,000, all with no rake. That means every dollar stays in the prize pool. Circa Million, 18 weeks, 128 ways to win. Circa Survivor, where you pick one winner each week, last one standing wins. And Circa Grandissimo for the high rollers, $100,000 entry. Enter in Nevada, but you can play from anywhere. 30 million guaranteed. Head over to CircaSports.com for more details. Again, circasports.com. If you're looking for more information, come hang out with us. We all, of course, will be involved in the contest like we are each and every year. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel, and VSiN managing editor Adam Burke hanging out with us. Speaking of football, I know you are relieved to have the NFL betting guide out now. It's been fun getting into all of that. And then what's your reward to turn around and start the college football betting guide? What? Did something just happen? Norway?
Yeah, we did, buddy. Let's go. And I believe it might have been our boy Holland who got it done.
Oh, no.
Yeah, 2-1. Let's go in the 86 minutes.
I don't need any more golden boot love for your boy.
Why?
I need him to stay back.
Why? What do you
stay
have?
Stay back. I have Mbappe.
Oh, I don't care about that. Yeah, let's go. Erling Haaland.
2-1. Norway after Ivory Coast scored. And, like, I thought we were going to. Granted, there's still time. There's still time.
Oh, the Norwegians are taking their shirts off in the book. How about
standing
this?
Standing on the table.
Look at this. Wow.
Oh, I wish that we had the Zoom capability on the book camera.
Leave them off. That would what are we doing?
Electric here at Circus Sports.
Loud?
Like we were saying, though. We'll
continue.
It's
going to be really loud tonight.
All right, fine.
Very loud tonight.
Yeah, the book.
Mexico plays tonight?
Oh, yes, yeah. The book will be crazy for that match a little bit later on. We'll keep an eye on this thing as we go, though. We're in the 86th minute right now, 2-1 Norway, and the fans are losing their minds. But like I was saying, your reward for having the NFL guide out is just starting over on the college football betting guide.
Yeah, I've already written a couple of my features. There's, I think, 34 new head coaches in college football this season. Ooh. I guess 33 actually new ones, but then another guy who had the interim tag stripped. And then I also recalibrated my home field advantage numbers. So I got that done yesterday, entered all the schedules in my spreadsheet that I put my power ratings into and get all my projected win totals. So yeah, I've been busy with college football, and you know what? It's always exciting to like start talking about a new sport, especially one like college football, where there's just so much turnover, so much player movement, such a high variance type of sport now. You know, at least in terms of a week-to-week basis, obviously the great teams are going to be the great teams and probably make the playoff, but a lot of good betting opportunities in college football. So looking forward to having that guide out Monday, August 3rd.
And new conferences. I mean, I get to write one of them in the Mountain West, and then there's the new Pac-12.
I mean, I also just found out like, a few days ago that Sacramento State is playing in the MAC, which makes a ton of sense, about as much sense as Northern Illinois playing in the Mountain West.
Oh, you don't love the great Big Ten rivalry of UCLA Rutgers?
I mean,
you know,
it's,
I guess it's what college football is now.
I'm super curious, right? You know, because you'll be right in Mountain West, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Northern Illinois having to go and play some of these games in elevation, stuff they'd never played before. Like, it's going to be really interesting to see how those things are measured in the market, but also, you know, how they actually play out.
I believe they have Hawaii, like a road trip to Hawaii on their schedule, too. Which is, let's see. No, okay, they get them at home. So either way, that was the other part.
Which is very interesting for Hawaii.
Yeah, having to travel. And it's funny, you and I were texting about this earlier because I was thinking about your home field advantage because I was looking through the assignments that we're having for the guide. If you look at the Mountain West right now and the way it's constructed, the strongest home fields are going to be, without question, Wyoming and Hawaii. Mm. That's it. I mean, because of the elevation at Wyoming and the travel distance it takes to get out to Hawaii. Outside of that, New Mexico, UNLV, Oops. Northern Illinois.
I mean, the Fargo Dome. Got North Dakota State in there now.
I think I texted you that, and I said North Dakota State might be up there now as like the third best one, because that's going to have ardent fan support. It's going to be an interesting place to get to. But for the most part, it is a very weak conference when it comes to some of these home fields. A lot of just bland, neutral, juiceless, we'll call them, environments. And that includes here at Allegiant, where, you know, they get crowds, but it's nowhere near a challenge to come out here and do anything.
Yeah, I know Dan Mullen's trying to create a different level of investment, and maybe that'll come in the coming years, but it's still not there where things sit right now. Got to start winning some championships. I know you love to talk about how many they get to, but got to win them as well.
Was the last time the Aztecs did anything over at the Snap? Thank you very much.
Right. I've still never been there.
Ooh, we got to go.
So I was trying to look this up on the fly. I believe Hawaii has played 3 games east of the Mississippi since 2017.
One of them was Army. I remember that.
So, well, maybe that's 4, because they played Michigan.
I think it was Hawaii.
And I believe they played UMass, right?
Yeah, maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Either way,
you're right on the other one, too.
Army? Yeah.
Yeah, they played Army, too. Yeah. I mean, it's to go to DeKalb, Illinois.
UNLV is your favorite for what it's worth in the Mountain West Conference this year, plus 260, New Mexico, plus 265, and North Dakota State, the newbie, coming up 3-1 there on the odds board for the new look Mountain West. That said, I know you had a few questions baseball related. Before we stray too far, I want to make sure you can ask Adam what you want to.
All right. First off, I've presented this in a couple of different platforms here on the network, both the Pod to the Futures and here on Money Moves. But it is amazing sometimes how in baseball a good week will change your thoughts if you're a team. Mm-hmm. And the Red Sox are having just that. Yeah. And it got me thinking, you know, you look at the American League wildcard standings, and the way I keep presenting it is, of the teams not in control of first place of their division or a wildcard spot, there are only 2 teams with a positive run differential. It is the Red Sox, and it is shockingly the Tigers, who are just +1, I think, still to this point. But the Red Sox are only 4 games back from a wildcard right now. Why would they not be a team? They're like 6-1 to make the playoffs. Why would they not be a team that I'm looking at to potentially make a run in a terrible American League?
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad play at all. And I actually, yesterday I got asked on my guest spot on a numbers game who my 6 playoff teams would be in the American League, and Boston was one of them.
Yeah.
Because I think this Boston team, I mean, they're incredibly talented. Their lineup is fantastic. You know, they've been getting some good pitching, especially from Connelly Early and Peyton Tolley. You look at this team, and there's some different alternate standings metrics you can look at out there. One of them that I really like to look at, and I'm not going to go deep into the weeds with this, but it's called third order win percentage. So basically, it's kind of like taking run differential, but then, you know, kind of weighing it based on the schedule that you've played. Boston is one of the biggest underachievers in Major League Baseball right now in that metric. The Tigers are also another one, by the way. I don't know if they have enough in the tank and they're going to trade Skubal, but Boston is a team that I think is much better than what their record would indicate here so far. They've had a lot of turmoil, right? It seems like everyone hates Craig Breslow for the way that he put the roster together. They fired Alex Cora earlier this season. If they can kind of overcome all of those things, right? And I thought there was a seminal moment in their season when they came back from Denver after blowing that game to the Rockies. They took off. They circled around for 40 minutes, had to land back in Denver, had a 5-hour delay, got home at 5 a.m. just to face Cam Schlittler that night, and they won the game. So maybe that was just kind of a galvanizing moment for this Boston team. I don't think that's a bad play at all at 6-1 because, I mean, I think the Rays are going to fall back to the pack. I don't know if they'll take their playoff spot, but the Blue Jays don't look that great. Orioles, the Central's a joke. The West, no one stands out. I think it's a pretty good play.
Yeah, that's part of it, too. It's just who of the Orioles, Athletics, Blue Jays, Twins, Astros really scares you outside of maybe Houston? And even then, we're talking about potentially one team. So,
And also, I mean, I don't know what Breslow is going to be allowed to do at the trade deadline, but when you think about the cache of prospects that the Red Sox have, they can go get an impact guy if they want to. And I think that there's a good chance that they will.
All right, this is a really micro question, but maybe it does matter for some situations. So I want to invoke Gage Jump one more time.
Yep.
So Gage Jump, for those who did not know, gets to start yesterday, been off to a tremendous start to his major league career. It was almost the complete opposite of what he was here in Las Vegas. He was having issues keeping the ball in the park, Stormy. He had command troubles, and yet he comes up, and he's keeping the ball down, and the command is fine. So my question to you is, it's a small sample size inherently at the majors. When you get a player like that, whose numbers are in complete stark opposite from what he was doing at the minor league level, how do you balance that? And are you ultimately waiting for those minor league numbers to pop back up? Because the other factor is he was pitching in a park that was awful for pitchers, which is out here in Vegas. Yeah. But you started to see that a little bit more in that game. But again, he was playing in Sacramento. So I don't know how to balance those things out.
Yeah, and also, I mean, he was facing the Dodgers, right? Yep. You know, I mean, I think he'd only faced one other top 15 offense by weighted on base average so far in his MLB career. So really stepped up in class, right? And it kind of caught up to him. It's a tough thing to kind of discern what's real and what's not in terms of minor league numbers, right? Because a lot of these guys are on pitch counts or innings limits, stuff like that. They'll maybe only work four innings, maybe strike out seven or eight guys, but, you know, kind of give up a couple of runs in bunches, you know, a couple times in the game, something like that. Also, I mean, the PCL in general is a very bad league for pitchers because obviously you've got Vegas here. Summerlin Ballpark up there is 3,000 feet in elevation. It's 100 degrees. Ball carries really, really well. There's also places at elevation in the PCL. Mm-hmm. So it's really difficult to kind of, you know, weigh those minor league numbers because then all of a sudden you go to sea level, right? And, you know, you have a lot better chance of succeeding. So it is, the cop-out answer is it's on a case-by-case basis, and it's certainly on a matchup-by-matchup basis, too, where you're playing a team that can't hit lefties like Cleveland. Yeah. Like you're going to be good. If you're playing the Dodgers, a little bit different. So, yeah, you definitely need to understand the context, especially Double-A, too, where the Texas League, ball just carries like crazy. The Eastern League, not so much. So you want to put the leagues in the proper context because there will be a lot of call-ups moving forward, so it's a good time to talk about that.
Adam, appreciate you hanging out with us. Thanks for this. Where are you going to go watch the France-Sweden match? You're really excited about that. I know. Can't wait.
You look Swedish.
I'm a European mutt, but I don't think I have any Swede in me.
We'll see you this time next week. Thank you. Appreciate it. Norway still up 2-1. We'll be right back. More World Cup and some Wimbledon discussion when we return on Money Moves.